welcome back, Pubcasters. This is the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. I am your host, Tim Hunzi. Our guest today is T.D. Ruth. He's a partner at Serling & Rooks. He is an attorney, and we are going to dissect publishing deals. I think you're going to learn a lot. We went down a few rabbit holes, but man, there is a lot of knowledge in this one. So strap in and enjoy. Let's talk about the general parts of a songwriter contract. Like if I came to you and go, dude, I don't know anything. I'm looking for a publishing deal. What are the first few things you talk to the initial songwriters about in any field? But we'll get into the differences between the two.
Yeah, and that's good because we're really, truly in a fun time. And not to jump ahead, but the fact that the melding, I think, has created some amazing things deal-wise, but also artistically. But yeah, I mean, you come off the street, and the first thing is congratulations and condolences to your parents. Nashville is still... We're moving away from it, but you know, if you have very little background experience and not a lot of rights, you very well may be doing a full pub deal, right? Mm-hmm. Full pub meaning, you know, you're assigning 100% of the copyright and 50% of the income. If you have a little bit of traction, you might be looking at a co-pub, 50% of the copyright, and only giving up 25% of the income. Everybody loves the funny percentages that we do in publishing deals. But the two most important things are time and money, right? And the younger you are, the more likely it is that you will need to give the publisher more time. That's not necessarily a bad thing as a songwriter, because you know it takes a lot of time and effort to develop and grow. And that's the world that you know that I don't, other than knowing it from the outside. Then how much money? And, you know, it is counterintuitive as the lawyer, the number one thing to always keep in mind in doing a deal isn't even about pub deals specifically, but it's that Nashville is a small town and the music industry is a small community. Don't be a jerk. That's rule number one. Be cool, because even if you're not predisposed to be a good person, Nashville in particular is amazing. It's an amazingly small community where everybody knows everybody, and truly the cliche about, you know, Nashville being what can I do for you and LA being what can you do for me, not to disparage LA, but it's really a testament to how amazing Nashville is. A lot of people come off the street and they think that, you know, if they're going to go do a deal, which, you know, Big Machine is not a small company anymore, right? But no. So I don't think I would call Big Machine a major, but it is a very, very big company. And so you might get the man label, right? But even when I was in law school, or when I was in college, when I first got started in the business, I was managing. And I didn't know anything, but my my buddy had a band and they were really good. And the first thing that he said was, that he taught me was, got to own your masters, right? You know, this is this mantra. And unfortunately, that friend of mine is still playing living room concerts, and I'm 47 years old. And so you cannot be too precious. These people are not here to exploit you or take advantage of you. There are some snakes in the grass, but by and large, 98% of the people in the city are wanting you to succeed and want to help. And so, you know, you can't be too precious, but it doesn't mean do a dumb deal either, right? I mean, there's a fine balance.
I want to touch on, I love that you said that, because on my end, you know, a lot of us people would say that we, between attorneys and publishers, that we have this kind of, animosity sometimes. I mean, I have had some arguments with my friends that are attorneys, but we usually will then on Friday sit down and have a beer together or something. So it's an interesting relationship. But time and money are the two biggest. I love that you started with that, because no matter where we go into details of a contract, the two big things I find with any writer, especially we're mostly talking new, we can get more specific on how that changes as you walk down the road as a have more success, but it does take, on my thing, they call it a tenure town as no joke. It is the statistical average that you, it's going to take around 10 years for you to be successful. So if I find you as a new artist, I don't care what genre you're in, we're looking at a commitment that's going to take at least that first deal to just get you to know, as my boss likes to say over here, Mike Molinar, where the cafeteria is, where the gymnasium is, where it's first period. Like, it takes a minute to kind of get your feet under you. And so even if you're getting into a bidding war, you need to remember that money that you're getting talked into taking. And I'm not against people getting a livable salary. I'll ask you here in a minute what ranges are these days. I kind of know, but I'd like to get, you're probably in it more than me currently. But the money that I'm going to hand you, you got to pay me back. And I think they forget that a lot. You know, it's called an advance for a reason. It's a recoupable advance. And for those that don't know, recoupable means you got to pay me back. And so you want to be careful, because I usually say I have about $100,000 trigger. Like, when we get to a hole that's sitting at about $100,000, I'm going to have to start making some decisions. And that, how quick do you want to get to that point is usually what I say. So I think you're kind of in agreeance, right?
Yeah, Tim, I mean, thank you, because that is, executive running another one of the publishing companies. And I had this conversation years and years ago. And you know, it was, of course, it was something that I knew, but the way he expressed it really drove it home. Because then, that's just it, right? And that's something we are always cognizant of going into deals. It's like, yeah, sure. I mean, we can go in and just strong arm and try to beat people up to get more money. But A, like you said, these are advances. It's not free money. It's your money. Granted, it's an interest-free loan. And by the way, it is worth pointing out very out loud, because a lot of young people coming in don't understand this, that although it is recoupable, meaning you've got to pay it back, it's not a loan in a proper sense, right? So you know, if the deal goes away, it's not like you have to turn around and write a check for that $100,000. But nevertheless, though, you're right. Like, you know, publishing is a business. And if we beat you up for these big advances or draws, as we also call them, then, like you said, I mean, of course, you're the one that has to make this decision, but then we're so sensitive to it. We want our clients to have a chance to succeed. We don't want to cut them off the knees and get them dropped after 2 years, because it's like, look, we think we've got a lot of momentum. We just can't afford to keep going on it, right? That's a very self-defeating sort of approach.
Yeah, that again, I like your approach to it, not against paying people. So let's just talk, we'll just call subject number one advances that we're touching on. That's one of the big things that everybody wants. What are the current ranges for new deals? I know back in the day it was a lot cheaper, but right now it seems like to live in Nashville, you need 35, 40K, maybe 50 for a new writer. Is that kind of what it's living
at? I mean, yeah, you're right. You know what, say 10 years ago, I think our range is maybe 24 to 36-ish for a baby. And now I would say maybe 36 to 50 is fair. And it depends too on the publisher, right? You know, again, not that you're some young whippersnapper company anymore, but you know, I think somewhere like Big Machine, you get, you as a writer, you got to be cognizant of the team, their bandwidth, the number of writers they have signed, the sort of attention you're going to get. And that too is where, I mean, sometimes you have to have a certain amount of money, right? You know, if we've dealt with that, you know, many, many times where it's, you know, you've got a young family or, you know, there's just something going on where it's like, look, if I don't get this amount of money, I can't live, right? And so, okay, well, we've got a target, but then everybody knows what that is. And that is a reasonable basis for pushing. But, you know, our sort of philosophy is, ask for as much as you need. And if you don't need, then ask for just enough to keep the publisher motivated, but not so much that they're disincentivized from picking up options.
That's a good way to put it. Let's jump to Next is usually term. You know, if you're not an artist, we can talk. I'm making notes to come back to some of these we're saying we'll get back to, but we're just talking strictly songwriter right now. So on a term basis, I feel like we've all moved more back. For a while there, we were at 3 years. That would be one initial, two option periods, but it feels like we've gone back to, well, I'll even say creative. I feel like in general, there's a number more of like 18-month initial terms with a couple more options attached to it, where you're hitting more like the 4-year range as a whole. Are you kind of seeing that as a standard right now again?
Yeah, a lot of that. And then, you know, depending on where the writer, you know, if we're talking about brand new writers, I feel like 18 is, you know, and again, this is coming from people like you, the smarter people that know what they're doing. But, you know, 12 months is not long enough to figure anything out, right? And with an established writer, maybe, because you already have their body of work and you know who they work well with. And but even still, you're not going to really get up and going. 18 months seems like good. But honestly, I'm, you know, it's sort of paradoxical, but I feel like a lot of my writer clients have been wanting to push for initial periods of 2 years, as opposed to, you know, so if we are in a 1+1+1 kind of situation, that we're just saying, you know, 2+1, because it's like, look, you know, if you know who I am and I know who you are, let's skip the dance, right? Let's just go ahead and jump right into this thing.
Which, going in as advice to anybody, I find often as you start to negotiate, it takes a while to get a deal. You'll backdate it some because, you know, for those that don't know, like maybe we start talking in May and it takes us till like, you know, let's see, we'll give it 3 months. So we signed the deal in August. It'll be dated back in May. So we already 3 months into the deal. So I'm with you. I'm more into personally when I ran parallel, because I don't always just speak for Big Machine. We do different things here too. But when I had my own publishing company, I would typically say, let's just do 2 years so we're not like in 6 months having to have this conversation again. I don't want to do this again. I want to work. So let's give us 2 years to work. So yeah, I tend to like that a little bit better, and then add on option periods as they come along, you know, and try to keep it that way. Cause I like everybody to breathe when everybody get comfortable. And you know, I find everybody gets a little nervous when options come up or you have to start talking your deal again, and we just want to work. I want you to be creative. So my goal is to make it so the writer feels comfortable. Like you said, even with the draw and everything, I want you to feel comfy. I want you to focus completely on writing songs. I don't want you to have to pick up an extra job. I want you to give all your effort into trying to make this to work. So we kind of touched on it because you talked about full pub, co-pub. So from my standpoint, again, if you're a new writer, first deal, or even if it's a second deal and you've had a gap, you're going to come in with some songs. So we call that Schedule A. I typically pick a few. That's my standard operating procedure. I'm not going to take everything you have, but if you've got some things, what can help your deal? If you've somehow landed some cuts, or you have a relationship with an artist that might elevate to a cut, that is an advantage to you, where you can have some leverage, some negotiating points to, you know, whether push the draw, push your publishing up or something. But typically, yes, we're going to ask for 100% publishing. I like to kind of, because you said percentages, it gets squirrely. Look, if you have no clue, there's 100% writer share, there's 100% publishing share. And you will always get, I shouldn't say always, generally speaking, you will retain all of your writer share depending on the deal. I don't think people are coming after writer share anymore. Maybe, I don't want to speak for everybody, but so you'll have your writer share of money. The part we're talking about is a publisher. And I find even new writers, to be honest, coming in, really being a little more aggressive, wanting co-pub again. And I'm like, look, man, we're digging in. Like, I got to start off with a full equity share, man, because I'm going to put in, especially if I'm putting my sweat equity in, I'm introducing you to people. I'm going to get you in rooms. That's going to be based on my relationships. I'm not giving that away. You know, I think sometimes it's set up like they're having to give me this. I'm like, I know that's where I need to start in order for this to make sense. Now, if you prove yourself and you get going and you have success, that is, I will of course be open to the discussion of giving you that down the road in another deal. And even sometimes, I don't know how you are. I'm a pretty writer friendly publisher. I always will again speak. I'm not speaking on behalf of Big Machine here. Just as Tim Hunzi, I've been a publisher for 30 years. But I'm usually pretty fair. Maybe in option three, if you've recouped, I will give you some publishing back because I want you to have that at some point. I want you to have some skin in the game that you can sell and want you to feel like you're valued as a partner in this. And that's another word I like. I'm not your boss. You're a subcontractor technically, but I want you, we're partners. When we do a deal, me and you, we're partners. Not, there's no like I'm up here, you're down there. We're doing this together. We're starting a company together. We're going to make this happen, right? So.
But and on the, you know, on the publishing, you know, on the split, that's also one of the things obviously we're talking quite a bit about. And you know, like, look, you know, kids are coming in, say kids, but writers coming in a little bit more sophisticated now because, you know, they're doing their homework and they talk to other people. But, you know, when we're looking at deals very similarly, you know, it's like, you know, every deal point is like a knob on the board, right? And you can't just turn everything up to 11. Otherwise, you're just going to get a bunch of noise and feedback. It's going to sound terrible. And that's kind of what we're doing. And really, every publisher is a little bit different on what their pain points are and what they're sensitive about. But when we're talking about how much publishing, even if it is a consideration, right? Even if somebody's open to it. Well, first of all, it doesn't have to be as binary as full pub or co-pub. You know, there's all kinds of ways that we can cut it up and do, you know, innovative things there. But it does still come back to risk reward for the publisher. And I think the one tool that I think, you know, if I can impart on anybody is that other than not being an a-hole is empathy. Understanding, you know, you think about the deal from the publisher's perspective, not to say that you have to, this by no means does it mean sacrifice your own interests for the sake of the publisher, but at least understand where they're coming from. And if you're a publisher and you're, you know, laying out potentially, definitely tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on somebody that you don't know for sure whether or not they're going to be able to write a great song, or at least a great song that gets commercial success and they get a return on their investment. You know, there's so much money that you're willing to risk. And in order to risk that money, there's an expectation of what piece of the pie you anticipate getting. And the smaller that pie gets, then it just puts more pressure on the time and the money that they can spend up front. So, you know, you can't ask for co-pub out of the gate and expect to get, you know, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 and expect to get a 3-year term. It's like, look, you know, you have to compromise somewhere so that everybody feels good. Because if it's a mutually good relationship, at the end of the day, it's you want to have success as a songwriter. That's the goal. Everybody ought to know at least that so much of this business, if you're writing great songs and doing well, that's the most important thing. But finding the right people to write those songs with and then finding the right artists to cut those songs that's where the rubber meets the road. And you as the publisher in that baby artist or baby writer deal are opening all of those doors. And those doors don't close to you when you walk out the door of the publisher. And so all of this benefit, long-term career benefit that you harvest out of that first writer deal stays with you throughout your career. Whereas you as the publisher very well, you know, if the writer decides to up and leave, then, you know, you don't get to see any of that upside. But the flip side is if the publisher hopefully is doing all that and the writer sees it, appreciates it, understands it. And you know, when you're doing a full pub deal, there's or, you know, whatever, there's always room to improve and tweak a deal going forward. And you as that publisher are in a great position to offer that writer things that nobody else can to keep them around, right?
You there know, you go. Yep. Give you
some of your publishing back on old songs.
I have to have a few carrots, I like to say, that as we grow and have success, that I can give so that we can stay in a deal that makes you happy, that makes me happy, and everybody's winning. And to go back to it, like, I'll just use easy math. I'm not even going to say number one. Let's just say a song, you know, you have a top 10. I think those still make around $600,000. That's easy math. It's probably a little more, a little less, depends, but 600 is an easy split. So for the math part of this, friends out there listening, 300,000 goes to the writers, 300,000 goes to the publishers. Let's say there's three writers. A lot of times there's more than that these days, but each writer just made $100,000 on theirs and each publisher made $100,000 on theirs. It seems fair that if I've invested and we've gone in this together and we're partners, that on that initial term, you know, like in that first deal, that if somehow you've had a top 10 in your first 4 years, which is super impressive, that means you had to write a hit, song had to get cut, get released in that same time period, which, as we all know, it's not usually like that. It takes a minute for songs to get released, even when you get a cut. But there's $100,000 for each. And that's not me robbing anybody. You still made your $100,000. Now, that leads me, well, we can jump into a couple different roads, you know, but let's say, well, we both made money is my point. And then everybody's happy. And then if you're doing well and I'm doing well, then your deal comes up. That's where we sit and renegotiate things and go, okay, you're having hits, I'm making money, how can we do it? So that's where I'll give you back some of your money. But also, I like to go back to the math. Like, okay, let's say the next deal, because you've done really well, I'm going to give you half of that back. Well, suddenly off a hit, that same song, if it hit the same level, I'm all of a sudden just seeing $50,000 and you're seeing $150,000. So not that I'm not making money, but my money just went in half and yours, you know, you went up a third or more than a third, right? Hold on. I'm terrible with math. 50%. So you're making 50% more and I'm making 50% less. So it's, and I'm not saying that's unfair. I'm not arguing that that's not unfair, but you should always remember the math, because if you're riding with four people, that really diminishes things on everybody's part. So anyhow, I'm now going down a rabbit hole, TD, that I can't pull myself
out. Well, but I want to, though, because this is something literally that just came up yesterday. And it, I mean, it comes up regularly. But, you know, being very fortunate to have a healthy amount of my practices in LA and in pop style deals and Nashville style deals, you know, I've come to appreciate, you know, there's pros and cons to both style. And quickly, you know, in LA, historically, I mean, go back, you know, maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago, all the deals there were MDRC deals. So Nashville is MDC, and that's minimum delivery commitment. You deliver, generally speaking, 12 songs, 1,200% songs in a year, and you're done, right? You've satisfied your obligations as a songwriter, publisher's happy, everything's good. In LA, the way it used to be was an MDRC, minimum delivery release commitment. And, you know, it may only be three songs, but those songs had to get commercially released in order to satisfy. And that obviously is much, much harder to do. They always infuriated me because, you know, it's a little cheesy to say, but you know, it's like, look, as a songwriter, it's my job to write songs. And as a publisher, it's your job to sell songs. And if I'm not getting songs on radio, maybe they're not good enough songs, but you're not doing your job either. And I don't like that it puts the burden on the writer both to create the song and then to commercially exploit the song. So those fell out of favor. One of the tools that we often used in those MDRC deals was, okay, well, there's a minimum delivery release commitment. And this is, you know, again, going back maybe 15 years or so ago, when, you know, the release commitment also had to be a major label, right? Well, then it's like, but, you know, I remember the time working on Adele's record, and it was an independent release, and it was like a massive, massive, I think it was 21 maybe. But that would not, Adele's album would not have satisfied an MDRC in a traditional major label pop deal, which is just massive.
I saw that happen with a Jason Aldean massive record, and it literally did not fulfill a writer's MDRC, and it made no sense. This writer was hung up, and I will say, I can't tell you who the writer was, but it was at a major publisher, and they weren't very kind and didn't really, and I would have, anyway. Yeah. Yes, I hate those deals. Those were bad deals.
So what we would do, though, as the backstop for that very situation, it was, you know, it's MDRC, but then we would also have a secondary trigger that, okay, well, even if we don't satisfy the MDRC, at the end of the day, your concern is money. And so if I recoup, if I make a certain amount, if my songs make a certain amount of money, even if it's one massive, massive song, then I'm good, right? I get to move on. Well, then everybody hated MDRCs, but then what sucked was that they dropped off the MDRC and put all the focus on recruitment. And so now, across the board, all LA deals, not all, but and pretty much all that I've seen them, are recruitment-based. And that's really, really important, because we still, even sophisticated people, have a problem sometimes grasping these two concepts. Because, you know, if you look at a Nashville deal, like we were talking about, right? New rider deal, 36,000, 50,000, not a big number, but you're getting that number every year for 3, 4, 5 years.
Spanned over a month, yeah. We pay monthly.
And nice little chunks so that you can pay your rent every month. In LA, it's like, well, you know, Nashville deal, I only get, you know, it's a $50,000 advance, and I can go out to LA and get a $250,000 deal. It's like, yes, you can. You can very easily get a $250,000 deal. It's going to be recoupment based. And the number of new riders that I've seen recoup inside 3, 4, 5 years, I could probably count on one hand, and I could count with fingers and toes and every other appendage. I mean, you don't recoup that quickly. Because like you're saying, right, it takes time to just get in the rooms and find, you know, just to find the cafeteria. And then it takes time to find that the rider crew that you work with. And it takes time to get the songs out there and pitched and cut. And then even once they come out, you've got, you know, a good solid 18 months at least until the money starts flowing. And then another 6 months for the money to hit your account. So it's going to take forever. And the other thing, though, and this is what I don't love. I love it being in Nashville. I don't love it the opposite direction. But the conversation I was having yesterday is a client who's got a joint venture deal with a Nashville-based publisher who is accustomed to doing Nashville-style deals. And this guy out in LA, a very seasoned A&R veteran, has been bringing several riders to the deal. It's like, here's this rider. And the Nashville publisher is like, great. And every single offer they put out is a Nashville style deal. I think the Nashville style deal is much, much better. I think it's the right value proposition, both directions. But there is still the thing, though, of when in Rome, right? You know, we can sit here and tell an LA writer that you are better off doing this deal up here than you are this deal up here. But they just see, you know, several $100,000 and that's it. And so this guy has missed out on signing several writers because the Nashville publisher just, you know, they're used to doing things a certain way and they're not willing to adapt to the LA market. And so that's another kind of short sight, right? You know, I don't think those deals are good, but when we've had far more often has been the problem when an LA-based publisher tries to sign a Nashville writer and they're given an offering recruitment-based deal. And, you know, the writer's like, what is this? What are you talking about? So it just doesn't work.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi. Executive producer, Brandon Harrington. Mixing and editing by Casey Porter. And this has been a Dime Collective production.